intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the broadest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. In theaters across the country,
yes,
is Patterns of Evidence, a Fathom event.
Yes,
Tuesday night is coming up.
Tuesday, February 18th, 7 o'clock. It's the third in the series from our friend Tim Mahoney on the evidence for the Exodus. Patterns of Evidence, the Exodus, the Moses controversy, and now the miracle of the Red Sea crossing. It's going to be great. I'll be at Colorado Mills in Golden. Anybody wants to come to that showing, I think it's in the IMAX theater. Get your tickets online, and then after the film, we'll walk. Right there is the Yard House, and we'll get drinks, appetizers, and talk about what we just learned.
Yeah, and we highly endorse this film. We have the first two parts of that series have been fantastic.
Yes.
They had it on Netflix for a while. I wish it was still on Netflix, but it's not right now.
Yes.
Because we were looking for it for a friend.
But, so fabulous.
Yep, absolutely. The best.
And tonight at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, Dr. Jason Lyle, astrophysicist. So that'll be fabulous.
Yep.
That's this evening. So check that out. But I'm confused.
At youngearth.org if you need details.
Youngearth.org for details, how to get there, Littleton Baptist Church. Fred, what are you doing here? We had promoed. You promoed last week that you would not be here, that your son Ryan would be here.
Oh, yeah. I did do that, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Hey. What do you know? Hey, there's Ryan. Hey, hi, Ryan.
All right. Fred, you got to give him your seat.
Okay, I'm going to give up my chair.
Okay.
And so here's Ryan Williams, future creation speaker and software engineer.
All right. Actually, Ryan, you are a software engineer right now, right? You graduated. You got a degree.
Yes, I am. I graduated from CSU around 6 months ago, so been a software engineer ever since.
Congratulations on that. And I only know because your father likes to brag that you graduated from up in Fort Collins, CSU, Colorado State University.
Yes.
4.0, magna cum laude. That is a tremendous accomplishment.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you're now on unemployment? Is that true?
Yeah, exactly.
You got a job right. In fact, you interned with your dad's company a couple summers, but you're working now, right?
Yes. Yes. I interned with my dad's company a couple summers, and then I kind of got tired of him, so figured I'd try something different. So now I work at a different place.
That's super. Congratulations on all that. So you went for 4 years to a secular college campus, and you are a Christian and a young earth creationist. So I'd love to ask you what that experience was like being on campus and being a creationist.
Yes, it's quite an experience, and there's a lot of people there who are Christians, and there's probably a good amount of creationists, but a lot of the times, especially that topic, really falls to the wayside. There's either people, they may be Christians, but don't believe Genesis is true fact due to high school or just deceived throughout their childhood, or they just maybe believe it, but don't really want to talk about it very much because they don't know a ton about it and don't want to have to get in an argument. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they know a lot about it, like in my case, and they'll talk to people, but there's so few that really want to talk about it and are educated enough to feel like they can hold a conversation about it.
Could you give me an example of an interaction with students, dorm roommates?
Yeah, so one of my first interactions that I had was probably sometime around a month into my first semester, my freshman year. And we were walking from a class, me and a couple friends, just going to get some burritos at the library because they were super good. I'll tell you that much.
At least it's a way to get the students into the library.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go there much for other reasons. So we have to get a burrito.
We had a college professor on this show, Jerry Bergman. He's taught for like 35, 40 years in multiple colleges. And he said, there's nobody in the libraries. The professors don't even use the libraries. But if they got burritos there, hey, I'm up for it.
Oh, exactly. That's plenty of reason to go, at least for me.
Yeah.
But we were on the way there, and there was this guy out on the plaza, which basically at CSU is kind of the main area in between a lot of the classroom buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there and he was giving out these pamphlets and he was saying, question evolution. In these pamphlets he was giving out.
Question evolution.
Yeah, question.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So he was giving out these pamphlets and I saw him, I heard him, and I'm just thinking, oh, that's really cool. I want to support him, grab a pamphlet, then maybe this will spur up a conversation. So I grabbed the pamphlet. I was with two of my friends. One was a guy and one was a girl. And the girl said, she's like, wait, you don't believe in evolution? Not in a condescending way, but in like a surprised way, thinking that she just thought that it was a proven fact that everybody believes in evolution.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I actually don't. And then they were both kind of surprised. And then they asked why. So then we'd probably gotten to the library, gotten our burritos. And we talked about it probably for a good solid hour. And I just brought up different pieces of evidence. Like, for example, the one I like to go to first a lot is the fact that DNA and soft tissue has been found in dinosaur bones. Yeah. And how
where in the world? Have you ever talked about any of these things with your father?
Oh, no, of course not. Never would have
Fred
even
Williams
thought about it.
Would have never come up at home.
No, of course not.
Over the dinner table, no. How about on vacation? You know, we send him on assignment to China, to Rome, to Central America, and I have a feeling that his family members go with him on these trips.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, to our detriment, but I guess we have to, so
yeah,
we go with him.
So you brought up with these, your fellow students, soft tissue and dinosaur bones.
Yeah.
And they knew all about that topic or what?
Nope. It really surprised them. They had never heard anything about it, and they definitely thought it was interesting. You could tell they weren't ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it was at least interesting enough to give some thought, so that was cool.
Yeah.
And me and the guy who was there, we ended up being friends all 4 years through school. And we would talk about this type of stuff a lot. Like, we would just debate, talk about different pieces of evidence. He would present things to me, and then I would, you know, try to rebut them. Then I would present things to him, and he would try to. So we had a lot of good conversations throughout the years. And I never personally saw any of it hit home with him, but I'm hoping that it still was able to make some sort of impact, something that hopefully, as he hears more things throughout his life, presumably mm-hmm. from other creationists and Christians, that would possibly make a, like, maybe be called back in his memory. And
yeah, it's planting seeds.
Yeah.
And some plant, some water,
mm-hmm.
and then God reaps the harvest.
Yeah, exactly. So one piece of evidence that he brought up to me, it was actually one of the first ones that he brought up, I imagine because he was a very smart, intellectual guy. So I'm sure that, you know, it was one that he thought was a very good piece of evidence.
Yeah.
Maybe even one that he'd like used before when he'd been talking to people. So he asked how, if God created the world 6,000 years ago, yet all these stars are millions and millions of light years away, how they could possibly get to Earth and we could see it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's been really nice for me is to have my dad as a resource where I can always go and ask him, but I was able to ask him afterwards, but in the moment I had to come up with an answer. And I just thought of the...
Well, sometimes it's okay to say, you know, I don't know, but I'll look into that.
Yeah.
So that's always, you know, when we don't know, that's a great thing to say, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I didn't know a lot, and I did say, well, if God did create the stars and the earth, he could have created them with the light already here.
Mm.
And that was what I brought up. But then after talking to my dad a little bit about it, he brought up some interesting things just about how all that works. And then the idea, too, that they've also got their issues with the light speed.
They have a starlight and time problem.
Yeah.
So the old earther, the Big Bang proponent, the atheist secular origins person, they will say to the creationist, how does the light get here? There's not enough time. Well, in their Big Bang story, there is not enough time in 13.5 billion years for the light to get across the universe to where it's all come to a even temperature of 2.7 degrees Kelvin. And it's called the horizon problem. And Big Bang cosmologists, they recognize that there is not enough time for the entire universe to arrive at that even temperature. And they'll say that's their starlight and time problem. So they make secondary, tertiary assumptions where your dad and I have talked about stretch cosmology, where God stretched out the heavens with the possibility, 11 times the Bible says that God stretched out the heavens. And so if he created galaxies at these tremendous distances from Earth, and then he literally stretched the light, it went through not a stellar nucleosynthesis, but like a hyper or an uber stellar nuclear synthesis, and he's pulling all that light to fill the universe and come to the Earth. That is a possibility because we're talking about a supernatural creation.
After I gave that initial answer, I talked to my dad about it. He explained that to me, and I never heard any of that before either, and I thought it was super compelling.
It is neat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, your dad and I have been talking about that on the air for 10 years or more. And a few years ago, two Fathom Event films, creation films, Genesis Paradise Lost and Is Genesis History, if I recall, they both presented that model of the light, God stretching out the heavens. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, and I think the phrasing of stretching out the heavens is really cool too, because it makes sense to anybody, even if you don't believe the Bible, that still makes sense.
And yeah, it's a model you could comprehend.
Yeah, exactly. So when I did propose that to him and bring up that idea, he also thought that was, like, he thought it was a good answer. He didn't have much of a response to it.
Yeah, because those who are critics of biblical creation need to realize, if they want to make some kind of an assertion against biblical creationism, they have to try to refute biblical creationism, not some other idea.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to refute the argument that you're opposing.
Oh, exactly.
Right. So when they remember that, they often realize that their arguments are a lot weaker than they thought.
Mm-hmm. So kind of to build off what you just said about stepping into the view you're trying to rebut is you have to, like, look at their assumptions and see how they assume things, and then take it from there and see where theirs is illogical, or in reverse, they have to come into your viewpoints and see where it goes. Mm-hmm. So there was another time at CSU where they have this, like, area on campus in that same kind of plaza area, and it's deemed the sort of free speech zone.
Yes.
So there was one time I was coming back from class and walking through that area, and there was this guy at a table, and he was talking to probably two or three students. So I just came over and listened and just wanted to see what they were talking about. And he was talking about different stuff with the Bible, and they were kind of giving him different answers or different questions, and he was trying to answer them. And I can't remember if I ever chimed in for a couple of them, but then it reached the point where there was one guy left, and he asked the guy who was at the table about how, if Adam and Eve, say, were real and they had children, how their children would then...
could reproduce.
Yeah,
how
could
they
reproduce.
Marry?
Yeah, because of the idea of, like, incest, and we see how that works now, and
right.
It doesn't
it's
work well.
It's very dangerous.
Alert. Yeah.
It's immoral, and it's mm-hmm. dangerous physically.
Yeah.
Birth defects and all.
Mm-hmm. So he brought that question up, and I was thankful. I just talked to my dad about this topic probably a month before, so I was able to answer it. In the idea of stepping into the belief system that you're trying to refute, I'm like, if you look at it, you're God and you create a perfect world, that means you also presumably created a perfect gene pool without any mutations, any issues yet.
Wow.
And I probably explained it a lot better back then because I was more fresh.
Yeah, but no, you're doing great. So Adam and Eve had no mutations in their genomes.
Yeah. So by the time you get to their children, they've got, like, one generation worth of mutations. So it's still very, very close to perfect.
Almost no mutations.
Yeah.
In one generation.
Mm-hmm. So when they have that perfect genome, a genome that has presumably all the traits for all the different, that has all the genes for all the different human traits, they would be able to reproduce with each other because their genome doesn't have the mutations and the
wow.
issues that it would have nowadays that cause the problems that result from
wow.
incest.
So when we think about Adam and Eve's kids, or even Abraham, the father of the Jews, married his sister Sarah, his half-sister, and that was not prohibited by God, and it was not dangerous, it wasn't unhealthy, until centuries later in the Exodus, speaking of patterns of evidence, in Tim Mahoney's film coming out in theaters nationwide Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, can't wait. But at the time of Moses, then God commanded mankind to no longer marry within close family relationships because there were now so many mutations in the genome that you and your close relative are both likely to have a mutated gene, an important gene. And whereas if you marry someone who's not a close relative, there's a real good chance that where you have a broken gene, they'll have a healthy gene, and so your children will be healthy.
Yeah.
So all that was not a concern when Adam and Eve were first created, and their children would then reproduce with siblings and cousins and so on.
Oh, exactly. And what was really cool about that is the guy who was running the table was a Christian. He had never heard that one before at all, so he thought that was super cool. But what was really neat about it was the guy who asked the question, you could just tell that he was super compelled by this, like that one really hit him and he really thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So that was that was cool to see that reaction.
Thank you for being there for him, for that guy. Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
More extroverted.
Okay. And so thankfully you're able to, this guy's a stranger.
Yeah.
And you're able to get in the conversation.
Yeah. And I never saw or heard from this guy afterwards, but hopefully.
Sure.
Hopefully, again, it was like a seed.
Yeah.
And he eventually found the Lord. And
yeah. And even though you probably don't know his name, we don't know his name, but still we could pray for him.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. In fact, can we do that right now for a moment before
yes,
we
I'd like
continue?
That.
All right. Lord God, you know this guy. Ryan doesn't recall his name. We sure don't know, but you know who he is. So we ask you, Lord, to work in his heart and his mind, your Holy Spirit, convicting him of sin and helping him to turn toward you, Jesus, in faith and trust in your death and resurrection. And Lord, those around him who are Christians, please help them to be bold. Help them to open their mouths and share the gospel with him. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome. Ryan, thank you so much for being there for him. So that's at the Free Speech Zone, and the Free Speech Zone that day. We've encountered those on college campuses around the country and had some good free speech that day.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought it was sort of a cool idea that there's an area where people can have free speech, but I also think that should be
it's a bad
every
idea, right?
area that there
right,
is. So.
Right, because free speech, I don't like when people say your First Amendment right to free speech, because that teaches people wrongly that your rights come from the government, but it's your God-given right to free speech.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, and it's not in zones. Great
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, normally when we've encountered free speech zones, it's because we're fighting to speak outside of those zones. So that's just super.
So there were other times too, like for example, in biology classes, where every semester you have really any science class, there's going to be the one day or maybe multiple days if you're unlucky. They're going to be the evolution days where they give evidences for evolution and they go through. But really once they go through these different evidences they have, none of them are really very compelling if you have a solid base and even not even a solid base, but even just any base at all of knowledge.
In science, basic science.
Yeah, in science, the Bible too, which is why like I'm extremely thankful personally that I had parents who not only just told me information, but also encouraged me to go learn it, figure it out myself, have like a depth of knowledge in both the Bible and in the evidences for the Bible, which I feel like for me really helped as I went to school because...
Yeah, the apologetics. The Bible says, be ready to give an answer to those who ask for the hope that lies within you. So to give an answer to the questions people ask.
Yeah.
So and you had that what a blessing you had in your upbringing.
Yeah, and I was so thankful for that. And when I went into school, I don't even know if it's a real stat or not, but it's one that's thrown out there where 1 in 4 Christians stay Christians after they go to college or something along those lines. And I knew and I was aware of that. And as I went through school, I made sure that I didn't lose sight of my faith or anything. But I feel like what can contribute to that number is when people go to college and they don't have a depth of knowledge. They don't know that much stuff. They're kind of like I alluded to earlier, where they're Christians, but they don't maybe believe in Genesis, or they don't know much. So
they haven't been taught about creation, the global flood. They haven't been taught about the errors of Darwinism and the Big Bang.
Yeah.
And so they're vulnerable to these materialist, secular origins myths, the fairy tale for adults.
Yeah. And since they don't have that base, when they hear these things, even if they're not very compelling, like I didn't find them to be, they can still fall away because they just don't know. And it's unfortunate, which is why like stuff that you guys do here is great, because it helps give people information. These information can be a very powerful weapon.
Yes. Ryan, a few times you said, I'm so glad I had talked to my dad about that.
Yeah.
Not everyone has the opportunity to grow up in your mom and dad's home. You and your sister had that opportunity. For other people, there are so many resources. One of the smaller resources is Real Science Radio. But then there's creation.com and creationscience.com, Dr. Walt Brown, the Hydroplate Theory, Answers in Genesis, the Creation Museum, the Ark, the full-size Noah's Ark. Did you ever go to the Creation Museum?
Not yet. I really want to. So
yes.
Oh. Maybe you can get my dad to get on that the next show to get his old boy a ticket out to Cincy to see that thing.
That'd be fabulous. What a great resource that is. There are so many fabulous resources, and not only here in the U.S., but around the world.
Yeah.
The Korean Creation Society has hundreds of PhD scientists who are members.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's just so thrilling. And so it's not only if your mom and dad can teach you, although that's fabulous, but these resources are out there. And here at RSR, rsr.org, your dad and I, our favorite shows are the list shows, where we do our list of not-so-old things, list of problems with solar system formation, and on. It's so enjoyable. List of dinosaur soft tissue discoveries. And it just shows the mountain of evidence on almost every topic affirming biblical creation.
It really is a mountain. Some people, when I've talked to, they're surprised at how much evidence there is. That's what sometimes what I'll like lead with. I'll be like, you would really be surprised at how much evidence there is for this that you've probably just never heard like at all in your life.
And on the other hand, they take biology, which is good to take, of course, and they get the weakest conceivable evidence claimed to be for evolution.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything in your biology class at college at CSU, anything that was said to be evidence for evolution?
Yeah, because that's really what it is almost the weakest conceivable evidence. So even if you're armed with a little bit of information, the one I remember the most, I just thought it was almost surprising that they consider it evidence. But they talked about the homologous structures.
Oh, yeah. That's where two different species, kinds of creatures have similar anatomy. And they argue that, look, that shows they had a shared ancestry. They must have evolved because, look, they all have five digits on their limbs.
Mm-hmm. That's
like
what they say.
Like five fingers or five toes or three or whatever.
Yeah. And that was one that I never really found it compelling in the slightest. It's not an evidence, it's an explanation for why are things similar.
Yeah.
Whereas I could just as easily say, well, God's smart, so he's going to reuse things that work. Two different animals have wings, two different species. He's not going to reinvent the wheel. He could,
each
and
time.
He did
he
in
could,
certain places.
And he has, right? The hummingbird versus an eagle.
Oh, exactly.
He has, but generally speaking, he has brilliant designs. You're an engineer. Computer science degree. And when you create something that's brilliant, you tend to reuse it.
Yeah, and you can throw different flavors on that, like God did with, say, wings or with eyes.
Yeah.
But it's by no means an evidence for evolution.
No,
right.
Like, if you find different organisms, either flippers on dolphins or mammals with five digits, five fingers, a creator, intelligent design, a creator could do that, Or they claim evolution could do that.
Yeah.
Well, even if evolution could do it, which I don't think it can because of other arguments, but if evolution could do it, it's not evidence for evolution because a creator can create animals that all have two eyes.
Yeah.
The creator can do that. It's not proof that they've evolved from one another. If you are trying to dispute creation and put in its place evolution, you actually need evidence that would not fit the creation model.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what
I was
need.
Thinking the whole time.
And
I'm
you know
like,
what?
We can easily explain this.
The people who write the evolution textbooks, Ryan, they never figured out what you figured out. They don't know what we just said, that evidence for evolution would have to be evidence that does not perfectly fit the creation model.
Mm-hmm.
An example your dad likes to give is vision. And we've talked about echolocation. Like echolocation appears in bats and in dolphins. And the genes that code for that function are virtually identical. It stuns the evolutionist. How could they be identical? Because bats and dolphins, they don't have a common ancestor that had echolocation. And so the whole argument that if you have the same kind of function, same kind of structure, it shows shared ancestry, it's disproved 1,000 times over by their own model and their own evidence.
Oh, it really is. Because the off chance of one in a billion, Jim Carrey over there saying, you're telling me there's a chance of that happening not once, but twice or four or five times
yeah.
in all sorts of different creatures is so unlikely. So it really works against him.
Mm. And then, Ryan, something I wanted to ask you.
Oh, hey, Dad.
Yeah, Dom.
I know you have to go. You want me to close the show for you?
You're kidding me. It's that late already?
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, I got to go, all right?
All right, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You know Dominic, don't
you?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
Dominic.
We go way back.
Way back.
My son. All right, Dom, thanks a lot.
All right. Let me get my headphones on here. Greetings to the brightest audience, part two.
How's it going, Dom?
Good. So we got Fred and Bob out of here, so
yeah.
out with the old, in with the new, right?
Mm-hmm, the new generation, the future.
Yeah. So trying to fill in for my dad last minute, this is kind of scary, but you know, I heard back when you were in school, there was something about some political science class and global warming. Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, yeah. So there was this...
Hear about this.
Yeah, there in one of my class, I think it was my sophomore year in a political science class, me and one of my really close friends were in there. He's also a strong believer. He's a Christian creationist. We were sitting next to each other, and she was talking about global warming or climate change. My bad. That one's on me. Got to get it right because it's not really warming, you know?
Right.
It's not getting any warmer than it ever has in history, than past cycles. It's just there's always ups and there's always downs, and that's just the way the Earth and the cycles go. But she was talking about that, and she's going through the day. You know, we're kind of, you know, just half pay attention because it's, you know, about global warming and stuff. And then eventually she reaches the point near the end and she asks the class, she's like, so who out there by a show of hands doesn't think that it's worth spending all the money we do into looking into it? And this thing is a class of 200, maybe even 250 people. This is one of the big lecture halls. And I kind of like look around and we're sitting sort of in the front left-ish area. So there's a lot of people when you look back into your right.
A lot of people who can see you.
Yeah. And I kind of raise my hand a little bit, look around, then look at my friend to my left, and he's kind of doing the same thing slowly. So we make eye contact. We both raise our hands, and we look around the room, and there's not another soul raising their hand in the room.
I'd imagine you could hear a pin drop.
Oh, yeah. You could definitely hear a pin drop in that place. And then, you know, I actually really liked her as a teacher. So she asked, she's like, so you raised your hand. Why do you think that? You know, very... reasonable question to ask.
Right.
But I was like thinking, well, man, my first answer's gonna get a riot, so I definitely don't want to say that. And that's like, man, we don't even know if this is real. It's most likely not even. Yeah, humans probably aren't causing this. There's no real evidence to display every.
Right. I hope you don't mind me interrupting you, but
no,
something I
it.
Noticed about it is people act as if global warming and climate change are the same.
Yeah.
And it's like, as creationists, of course, we believe in climate change. The climate is always changing. The climate changes through history. I mean, just like look at the last 2,000 years. No, people act as if you don't believe in global warming, you don't believe in climate change. If you don't believe in climate change, you must be insane.
Yeah.
So they tie it in, but it's really not a good way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. And even like what you were just saying, where even now as a whole compared with 30 years ago, yeah, it's overall kind of different, but that doesn't mean that humans are causing it and we're headed toward an imminent doom,
right.
And we better get Mars ready right. quick because we're gonna be living there pretty soon. But
getting Elon Musk on that,
yeah. So I didn't want to say that though because like you right, know could right. feel the pitchforks just coming out.
Sure.
So I just said you know something that we don't really know a lot about because we don't something we don't know a lot about. I don't think it's worth pouring all this money into this field to solve something that we don't even know how to solve or if it needs to be solved. And that money could be very much better spent in other places. And then she asked my friend too, because we were the only two, so she could ask everybody who raised their hand sure. what their reasoning was. And I can't remember his reason, but he gave another good one. And she liked the reasons at least enough to not really roast him or, you know, give some heavy response. But
sure.
that was a pretty entertaining one. That was kind of sort of surprising, but also not really, that there weren't anybody else in the room.
Right. Like just two out of how big did you say the class was? Like 200 people?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that pressure, when you looking back on it, why did I feel scared? But when you're in the heat of the moment, that's like,
oh, yeah.
The social pressure is definitely there. Right. Totally. And I also heard you talking with your dad the other day about something that happened at work recently. And I didn't quite catch all that. Could you share that with me? I was interested from the tiny bit I did here, but
yeah, it was actually pretty cool because I was eating lunch. It was Monday with a couple other people, I think like two or three, and one of them was my roommate. So I just mentioned that, hey, I'm going to be back home later on the day of the show because I'm doing this radio show. And then he asked what it was. And so I kind of explained it a little bit, explained about this deal and what was going to go on. And like they thought it was interesting. But then, you know, it was also clear that it was about creation. It was about the Bible. And then one guy was, he wasn't rude or anything, but he had mentioned, oh, man, if you know, I just don't understand how people can't believe in microevolution. And I just had the thought in my mind, I'm like, oh, wow, well, most creationists believe in microevolution.
Right, right, totally.
It's a base of a lot of how things work, how two of the animals off the ark can go and then create all the different species of that type of animal. And I brought that type of stuff up. I told them, like, oh, well, I actually believe in microevolution.
It's the macro that
clear that it
us.
Happens. Yeah, it's the macro. And then one guy even conceded. He's like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of missing links that aren't there. There's a lot of links that are missing.
Sure, totally.
And he conceded that. So it was cool.
Not to mention that we've never witnessed a single change of kinds in history. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just that idea going from one kind to a whole different kind is yeah, something we'd never seen before. And it seemed like they were pretty receptive. It was a fairly quick conversation, but it was still cool and it related to this. So
yeah, that's fun. Yeah. I've always noticed, like you were mentioning with the pitchforks in the class at your back, it's always interesting how there's so much like retaliation whenever you mention that you are a creationist and you don't believe in evolution. People will treat you like you're a flat earther, which is just, to me, it's the funniest thing.
Yeah, it blows people's minds. It's,
right, yeah. As I was growing up, I did a lot of ministry, especially like pro-life ministry. And occasionally we'd go to high schools with some information and we'd pass that out. And that was always fun. But at those, I always had people who always came up to me and they would ask, so you believe God created us? And I'd say yes. And they'd say, so you don't agree with evolution? I'd say, yeah, I think it's garbage. But they would always be shocked by that, frankly. And they would say, like, how could you be so stupid? And then my favorite go-to question to ask them was, well, how would you evolve a vital organ? How would you slowly obtain this thing that you need to be alive over thousands, millions of generations? How would you slowly get this thing that you need to be alive? And then not one of them had an answer.
Mm-hmm.
An answer for me.
As a half heart, you're going to be croaked.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter if you even get lucky enough to get halfway because
right.
it's not going to work well
exactly,
yet. So you're done.
Exactly. But so I just think it's funny how they're so willing to mock us and ridicule us for believing in creation when you just ask them one question and they don't have an answer for you. You should at least have a way to back up what you believe before you mock other people.
Oh, exactly. So, something ready. But
right.
I feel like that can be a good wake-up call in some case for some of those people because they probably, just the amount of shock they exhibit, they probably didn't even, you know, some cases didn't even know that people didn't believe in evolution, like that one girl I was talking about earlier. And a lot of times, at least in my experience, people are very open to conversations about it, at least for the most part. But right, totally. I think it's a lot of just definitely some very hostile people out there. But I think a lot of it is just people don't know.
They sure, just, yeah, that's totally true. Mm-hmm. They've never been taught it. They've never even considered it.
Yeah, because our generation, and it is a very ungodly generation, but I do think it's also just a very uneducated generation.
Totally.
Like, as a whole, our age group just doesn't have both sides. They've right. just got the one side that's force-fed, and that's about all they got.
And even so that, they don't know it too well, yeah. usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I relate to that a lot. Growing up, going through high school especially, like obviously I was homeschooled going through the homeschool co-op, which there was a tiny bit of liberal evolution with people who believe that there. But the worst that I got was going through hockey, which hockey was like I played for public school teams, and hockey players tend to be very aggressive and not forgiving. So if they heard that you believe in something stupid, you weren't yeah. going to hear the end of it. But they would always, I remember, ask me, why would you believe the Bible? It's not credible at all. And they would essentially mock me, which, you know, everyone mocked everyone. So it wasn't like there were hard feelings. It's so interesting when you look at the Bible and you see all the things that are in there that normal men at the time when they were writing the Bible, they couldn't have known. And I feel like that proves that there was some divine inspiration given to the authors. For example, like in Job, God is kind of bragging about his creation. He says to Job, can you do this? Can you do this? No, no, of course you can't. You're weak and puny. Only I can do this.
Yeah.
And then he says something which is so astounding, which is that, can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loosen the belt of Orion? And it's just that points straight to the concepts of gravity and bound and unbound star clusters that they would have had no idea about back then. I feel like there's an astounding, just like you said earlier, a mountain of proof for creation, for the Bible.
And that's one thing so. I think, too, when people are like, oh, the Bible was nice for people back then, you know, it was neat for them, but doesn't really apply to us now.
But now we're more advanced.
Yeah. Look at this stuff. God was telling these people about gravitational star stuff that a lot of it's over my head. That's God talking about that to people way back when, before they could have even fathomed anything like that.
Right. Yeah, and the evidence for the Bibles and the scriptures, it's just astounding. But it looks like Jamie's telling us we're about out of time. I did want to mention to everyone that tonight is the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and I believe that's in Littleton. I think that starts at 7. Dr. Jason Lyle is speaking, and he's talking about the ultimate proof for creation. And I heard him when I was very young, and I've been a fan of him, so I'll be there for sure. The details for that are at youngearth.org, so feel free to check that out and show up there, and we'd love to see you there.
And also on Tuesday night, they have the premiere of the Patterns of Evidence, the third part. That is going to be about the parting of the Red Sea. So you're
That's
not going to want to
miss.
Yeah, right. yeah. You are not going to want to miss that. I definitely would love to go. I'm hoping that I'll be able to. I hear that both Bob and my dad himself are going to be there and possibly signing autographs. This is also going on nationwide. So even if you don't live in the great state of Colorado,
right.
You can still
you can make
tune
it to a
in.
Theater
yeah.
near you.
You may not be able to meet any of the all-stars like us, but you know, you can at least see it. So definitely
we'll
try to make that.
We'll put up a picture of us watching.
Yeah.
So that'll have to do. Yeah. And then afterwards, the people who are going with us will be heading to the Yard House after, which is like, I don't know, like a 100-foot walk from there. And we'll be talking about what we just saw. And that'll be a lot of fun. So Ryan, thanks for being on the show today. Thanks for co-hosting.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely sure glad I got a chance to do this.
Yeah. So for Fred Williams and Ryan Williams and Bob Enyart, this is Dominic Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real, that's what I'm talking about.